Item seven, Donald, is it four? Donald four? Mike, you're back again.
No, I'm not dizzy or much. Mr. Donald Four is requesting after-the-fact authorization to retain a 62.5-foot-long by 16-foot-wide concrete low-water bridge crossing on Hogue Creek to access the applicant's property on Quiet Meadows Lane off of U.S. Route 522 in Frederick County. The project is protested by an adjacent property owner. Frederick County is located in the northern part of the state in the red circle. Looking in a little closer, the green dot is indicating the project location. This is Route 522 here. And this is a topo map showing 522 Hog Creek, excuse me, coming down this way. Before I get into the specifics of the application, it's prudent probably to give you a little history on the of the bridge here. Mr. Donald Four purchased the subject property from Mr. Mike Smith in 2011. As part of the sales agreement, Mr. Smith installed a low-water bridge crossing so that Mr. Four could access his property through a right-of-way easement across Mr. Walter Davis's property, with the bridge position shown here in blue. Mr. Smith installed the bridge with the understanding that he did not need a permit from the Virginia Marine Resources Commission. This is because in 2003, Mr. Smith applied for a bridge in this location, and as a result of that application was notified that a permit from VMRC was not required. This is because of a VMRC policy typically where we do not exert jurisdiction on non-tidal streams where the drainage area of the stream upstream of the impact area is less than 5 square miles, which was what was thought to be in this situation. However, that assessment was incorrect back in 2003. In early 2012, this year, staff was notified of the bridge being installed, and staff was unaware of this previous application at the time, so we started a violation investigation and determined that the bridge location was jurisdictional for VMRC because its drainage area upstream of the bridge location was greater than 5 square miles. And that's kind of where we stand today, and that's why I'm presenting this application to you today. Again, this is a plat of the property, Hog Creek, running through here. Location of the bridge, Donald Four's property here on the lower part of the of the plat, and the protestant's property is located here, Miss Susan French. The bridge itself, like I said, is 62.5 feet long. It actually impacts 46 linear feet of a state-owned bottom from ordinary high water to ordinary high water, and the base of the bridge is 16 feet wide. So the bridge impacts approximately 736 square feet of state-owned bottom. This is a picture of the low-water bridge crossing that staff took back in May 2012 for a site visit to determine that the bridge didn't meet the specifications of the plan submitted to VMRC, which they did. This is the upstream side of the bridge. The water levels here are elevated just a little bit from a recent rain event. You can see this is a culverted low water bridge crossing, 6 large diameter pipes. And this is the downstream side of the bridge. As I mentioned earlier, the project is being protested by Ms. Susan French, whose property is here. In her initial concerns that she relayed to VMRC, she stated she hadn't, what were the environmental concerns of the project. As part of the public review process, VMRC conducted contacted Department of Game and Land Fisheries and Department of Conservation and Recreation about the project, who indicated that they did not see any major environmental impacts upon protected species or the resources in the area. She also indicated that she was concerned that this bridge would exacerbate flooding conditions upon her property. As part of the application process, staff typically wants to see some sort of floodplain study done for bridges like this, which was performed by a licensed engineering firm in the area. and determined that a 100-year flood event would not raise flood levels significantly on the upstream areas of the bridge. Ms. Susan French also indicated that she was concerned about her ability to access her property through a right-of-way easement, which I believe is this one right here. Ms. French, in addition to this piece of property, owns another parcel on the other side of Mr. Forrest's property down in this proximate area, and also owns another piece of property over here. She's concerned that if we allow the bridge to go in where it's at now, that she will not be able to build a low water bridge crossing herself. Staff indicated to her that we would weigh any application on her based on the merits of her own application. That the presence of this one bridge, you know, would not necessarily affect her application in that process. And that's kind of where we stand with the protesting at this point. In summary, staff understands the need for the applicant to have access to this property and feels that a low-water bridge crossing is an appropriate structure to provide such access. Staff also understands the confusion created by a previous inaccurate determination that a similar project did not require a permit from the Virginia Marine Resources Commission. In light of this error, staff feels that the assessment of any civil charges or additional fees would be inappropriate. Accordingly, after evaluating the merits of the project and after considering all factors contained in 28.2-1205 of the Code of Virginia, staff recommends approval of the project without any civil charges or additional permit fees. And I'll be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Questions of Mike? Mr. Fox.
Do we have any navigational issues here?
Sir, typically the stream is only a few inches deep.
Okay.
Can you go back to a picture of the actual bridge? That sits on the bottom of the creek?
Sitting on the bottom.
And any idea during a 100-year storm event where the water level would be?
Over the bridge. This is a low-water bridge crossing.
So it's intended to go over.
Yes, these slope sides you see here are designed to kind of force any kind of material up and over the bridge.
Okay. Any other questions? Is the applicant represented?
Yep, he's represented today.
Mr. Four? You wish to be heard?
His agent's here, actually.
Okay. No?
No.
All right. Which protestant is?
Ms. Susan French is the only.
Ms. French. Come on up, Ms. French. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let me swear you in.
I will affirm, sir.
Sure. Do you affirm that the testimony you'll give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So help you God.
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
My name is Susan French, and as you've seen on the plat, I am an adjacent property owner to the subject property. I own three separate parcels, and I'm here to oppose the application and request the commission deny the after-the-fact permit and to direct that the bridge be removed. I actually drove 4 hours from Frederick County, Virginia, to be here and be with you today, and I appreciate your time. I unfortunately think I may not have made enough exhibits for everybody. But I came here because this may be a small stream, and I've listened to a number of large-scale projects, but it's sort of my stream, and it matters to me. I want to tell you a little bit about the property, provide a little bit of background, because I think there's a lot more to the story about how this bridge came to be, and I want to share that with you in my objections. I bought my house. If you look in the exhibits, I bought my house and a 9-acre parcel in approximately 1984, and you will see from the exhibits there's a Google area map. I actually bought my property from Mike Smith, who is also the person that constructed this bridge. And as you will see from the 9-acre exhibit, which is number lettered D, you will see that at the low end of that survey that there is a right-of-way that runs through the low end of the property, and also you will see that the property, the residential property, encompasses Hog Creek. And I say that to you because this was the survey that Mike Smith attached to the deed when he sold the property to me in 1984. So the lawful right-of-way across Hog Creek was not where this bridge was constructed. If you now look at the Google map, I want to explain to you the sort of broader story here and how I came to learn about this bridge. I bought the house and the 9 acres in 84, and subsequently I purchased two additional parcels, a 30-acre parcel, a 44-acre mountain parcel, and the right-of-way that is shown on the survey on the 9-acre parcel is a right-of-way that actually accesses the mountain property and runs across now Mr. Ford's property, and it used to be Mr. Smith's property. Mr. Smith is very familiar with all of his land. This 9-acre parcel that my house sits on, and I've given you some exhibits here that I would like to be part of the record. When Mr. Smith bought the property, he bought it from his stepfather, who owned the entire farm tract. And that conveyance to him of the 9 acres included the existing right-of-way across the stream, which was not the sort of common right-of-way that people traveled on down to the stream. So when he purchased the property across the stream, which is now Mr. Forrest's property, the access across the stream was the exact same right-of-way that was in the deed he conveyed my house to me. And in other words, he knew exactly where the lawful right-of-way was. So I want to just sort of back up and correct, you know, the factual record, and I in no way fault the staff because I have a long history, a 26-year history with these parcels of land and with Mr. Smith. Mr. Smith knew that he was building, this bridge was built on a neighbor's property. The time it was constructed, he trespassed on a neighbor's property, on Davis's property. He did not build this bridge on the right-of-way that he and I shared to the property on the other side of Hog Creek. He built it on Walter Davis's property. Well, I'm sitting in my farmhouse. If you will look at the aerial map on Exhibit A, you'll see a little white skinny line, and you see an A from Google. Well, that's not where the house is. The house is actually right next to the dirt land. I'm home from work, sitting at my kitchen table, and there's an extraordinary number of trucks and traffic for 48 hours coming in. Well, that lane that goes by my house goes only to Walter Davis's house and the stream. So, you know, I finally get up and say, you know, what's the concrete truck doing here? I call Suzanne Davis up. We get in the car. We drive down to the stream. And this bridge, as you see it, Mike Smith was standing in the middle. And I asked the obvious, what's going on here? And Mike Smith says, look at this great bridge. And I said, well, do you have a permit or permits? And he said, of course, Susan, I have permits. And I said, well, may I see them? And he said, no. He said, I have it tacked on the tree on the other side of Hog Creek. I said, well, why don't you walk me across so I can see it? He said, you don't have permission to walk across this bridge. So I turned with my neighbor, Suzanne Davis. We got back in the car, drove back up the driveway, and almost in unison said he doesn't have any permits. None. So as I have listened to the matters that have come before the commission, I'm struck, number one, by this is a man who knew he was building the land on somebody else's property because he subsequently, post-construction of the bridge, the new owner, Donald Ford now, negotiated with the Davises an easement after the fact. And I don't want to speak for them. They're good neighbors. We got along extremely well, and the Davises knew I was coming here. But they feel a little bit guilty that they negotiated an easement on the property. But they did it because they were worried the property was going to go to closing. They would have some liability of this bridge and whatever might come to pass with this unpermitted bridge on their land. They were concerned about liability issues. They were concerned about both Suzanne Davis and I began calling everybody in the federal, state, and local agencies. And we determined from our phone calls that there were no permits and that permits were required. I suggest to you, from my conversation with Mike Smith, on the day that bridge, which would have been about, I think, 24 hours after it was built, and I had no notice of it, that he knew that he was building it on the neighbor's property. And I'll tell you why I know that. Walter Davis told me about 9 days ago, and I've been trying to track this down, excuse me, that approximately 12 years ago, he came upon Mike trying to put posts in along Hog Creek to build a bridge. And Walter Davis confronted Mike Smith and said, "What are you doing?" And Mike said, "I'm building a bridge. Get off my property or I'm going to have you arrested." Now, Walter is a very law-abiding person. So he did leave, and he got an attorney, and they sent a notice to Mike Smith to tell him that this was not where the lawful right-of-way was located. So for him to suggest to any state agency that, you know, he didn't think he needed a permit or permits, that he, you know, built this bridge on a lawful easement, none of those things are factually true, and the records will show to the contrary. The so that is essentially how I learned about the bridge, my confrontation, so to speak, with Mike Smith. This is also an instance where, and, you know, I tell you the story about what he said on that day. He thought he needed permits. You know, there would have been no other explanation for him to tell me he had them and it was posted on the tree. So, you know, honestly, the Davises and I got pretty demoralized because we didn't get the feeling that anybody was particularly interested in our plight. It was like, well, the bridge is there. What are you going to do now? It's your burden, which I, as a property owner, take some offense at. I understand that in some respects, until something happens, you know, nobody can act. But I am now, you know, when I got the notice from the Virginia Marine Resource Commission, first of all, I wanted to see the studies. And as has been indicated, there is an impact, environmental impact. First of all, I want to put out there that Hope Creek is already considered an impaired stream. I'm an attorney, but I'm not an environmental attorney, and I don't know all of the terminology, but basically the pollutant level in the stream exceeds the safe, you know, water quality level for people to swim and so forth. And, you know, there isn't any public benefit gained from this bridge. There is no public gain. The bridge impedes down near 522 where you come in the lane to get to all of our property. There is a bridge over Hog Creek, and people access the stream from that location. They have, as long as I've lived out there, they've walked up the stream and fished because the banks are privately owned. There have been times when I've been asked permission for letting people access the stream from my property, which I have done. But the access for fishing, for tubing, for recreational activities on the stream is essentially through the stream. This stream is typically more than 2 inches deep. I have tubed down this stream. I am a upstream, downstream landowner. I have tubed. I have, with my children when they were younger, we've certainly bathed in the stream. And we have spent hours fishing in the stream. There was, and I can't speak to whether there's any brown trout anymore in the stream, but there have been. This was a state stock stream for years of rainbow trout. I don't know if it still is. But, you know, this bridge does not in any way benefit the public. And it was built in complete defiance of the local zoning ordinance, the building inspection regulations and state requirements, and the permits. And this is not, Mike Smith did not do this, you know, as I've heard from others, they simply didn't know. This is not where somebody applied for two permits and forgot the third one, and is not a person who shall we say, he's not unfamiliar with the law. He has a reputation in the community for not being a law-abiding person. So I have articulated my concerns in my presentation. I am concerned about the construction, and it's not that I have an imminent need to build a structure over the stream, but the point of the single crossing was to disturb the stream but one time. And to have, you know, a bridge constructed in violation of every federal, state, and local law and ordinance by someone who knew exactly what he was doing is not a person who should be rewarded by, and I will say, I understand he's not the petitioner, but this bridge was built when the property was under contract. And as was just apparently stated, and I didn't know this to a certainty, I had heard there was a provision in the sales contract that there would be a bridge constructed. And I heard that when Mr. Four was getting close to closing, money was escrowed because of the problem. And he knew at that time that the bridge was built without any permits, and he knew it was built on another person's land. So although I don't know when he learned all of that, it is clear that when he closed on the property, he closed on it knowing that this was a bridge built with no permits and initially on someone else's land. The other matter that concerns me is I did communicate with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and they, I believe, recently approved a permit or sign-off for the bridge, but as a access to a single-family dwelling parcel. There is a restriction, and I put it in your packet, there is a restriction in the deed that says no structures can be built on this property, on this parcel, that the bridge accesses. So, you know, maybe there's an explanation for it, but I raise an additional concern that this property is now being treated as a single-family dwelling. It's, in my time living on the property, not only is the stream flooded, but it's flooded by hundreds of feet, like a raging river. I believe, but I'm not certain, that the entire parcel, Mr. Forest parcel, is all within floodplain, and it all floods. And I don't mean like a little bit of water seeping up. I mean my woods, and as you see, there's this picture of the springtime and the bluebells for those of you who have colored pictures. All of those plants are not only submerged, but in raging waters when there's a bad storm. So I also question whether or not this bridge that was constructed to access essentially recreational land is deserved approval of an after-the-fact permit when there isn't any benefit to the public and there isn't any benefit to the adjacent landowners. The only benefit is now to Mr. Four and before Mr. Smith so his land could be sold. I guess in part what I'm saying is when I've accessed my mountain land to date, I've walked through the stream and walked across the property along my right-of-way. This is a recreational piece of land. At least, as far as I can tell, you couldn't build a structure on it because of the building restriction, the no structures in the deed itself. I'm not talking zoning. I'm talking about the covenant or restriction in the deed. I do have concerns about the impact on the environment, both. It's a beautiful stream bed. There's billions of Virginia bluebells and dogtooth violets. I have been careful to not intrude upon them during their blooming season or any other time. I have seen this wood turtle that has been described in the reports on the property, so I know it's there. And I've included in the exhibit from the Virginia Outdoor Foundation a habitat map that they did. And if you see the little black map in the middle, those are two of my parcels. And so, you know, I know that it's just a little creature, but it's there. And I would just suggest in weighing the other thing I want to say is backing up. Had Mike Smith complied with the law, had he actually followed Section 1203, had he actually filed for a permit for this bridge, and the notice has been sent out, both the Davises and I would have objected, and that bridge would not have been constructed because it was on their land, and they were not in favor of it. They sold the easement sort of as a concession to limit their liability with a lot of strings attached in terms of what if the bridge, you know, what if the bridge blows downstream? What if it knocks out the bridge at the highway? So it wasn't that anybody was in favor of this bridge. And so had he done it properly, had he given the notices, then we would have objected and the bridge would not be there. It simply wouldn't be there. And I think it's interesting to note that this comes down to financial benefit for Mike Smith and the current property owner. Is it increases the value of the land to have that concrete bunker in the middle of the stream so they can get easily to the property. Seriously, it does. The having to walk or ford the stream for a recreational piece of property doesn't hold the same value. So there is a financial motive, and I understand, but I'm concerned that I was just sitting on my chair in the kitchen when all of this happened. And so what about my rights? What about my property rights? What about the notice to me? What about me being able to come here and say at the very beginning, I object at a time that the bridge could have been stopped? And so I ask you for the reasons, and I'm not going to go through all my exhibits, but I would ask that they be accepted as part of the record. And I made a chart at the end. I just have to tell you, when I went to law school at William & Mary and I lived in Newport News for 5 years, there were no PCs. We didn't research the law on computers and through LexisNexis and all of that. And so I'm coming of age in learning how to make charts, and they're very simple. But to me, it's very powerful when you get to the last exhibit. I weighed in a chart the public benefits, in my opinion, the adverse impact on the public. I made a chart of the public or the benefits to me, French the landowner, none, the benefits, I mean no benefits, only adverse impact. And then I did a chart for the petitioner. He gets all the benefits. There are no downsides for him. And there's no upsides for anybody else. I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions of Ms. French? Mr.
Plummer. Yes, so I want to make sure I understand exactly what your position is that it was Mr. Smith who had completed the construction, that is your understanding, and then obtained permission from the landowner after construction and only came to this board through Mr. Four post-sale or whatever, pursuant to the terms of their arrangement with one another. Is that your understanding?
I don't know if Mr. Four is here. I frankly would love to meet him. He's a new property owner, and he's never stopped to talk to me or call me. I've handed my phone number out and asked for him to call me and talk to me. But it may be that the easement was negotiated by Mr. Four with the Davises, not Mr. Smith, or all the above. But it was after the bridge was constructed. I know that for a fact.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Ms. French.
I have one question.
Sorry, Mr. Tanker.
You mentioned in your public benefit versus adverse impact that this will obstruct the use of canoeing, fishing, tubing, walking. Is this now? How often do you see canoers and fishermen,
you know,
et cetera?
I'm not down there on the stream, so I can't give you a, you know, not. I'm presuming not often, but there is always enough depth to tube on that stream. In the driest weather, it flows. And needless to say, I spent more time in the stream when my children were at home and younger, but they're grown and gone. But I know it's an area that there has been activity, and I can't speak to upstream beyond me.
And one further question.
Sure.
You also mentioned federal laws in your adverse impacts. Define multiple federal, state. What in particular was your federal law that was?
Well, I mean, excuse me.
impacted.
Right. I think the Clean Water Act, I think the National Environmental Policy Act, which imposes a requirement that projects be looked at for the cumulative effects of the environmental impact. For example, near the bridge on 522, there's a, I don't know if you call it a point source, effluent discharge from an elementary school that comes in, which would be downstream. I know there's various pollutant issues associated with that. I think ammonia, I'm not quite sure. And then there's obviously, you know, some of it is more in the natural category of the grazing of animals. But there's chemicals and there's septic system, well, lack of septic system. So it's my understanding that, you know, I've been told, well, we just look at this project. We don't look at the impact on, you know, what happened before and what happened after. And it's, you know, I've tried to read up, and I have a long way to go, but I think that this is not a project. And I have concern about the concrete sitting on the stream bed. I had always understood there was some level of leaching that occurred from the concrete into the stream and affected, you know, there's like crayfish and all sorts of critters in the stream. I don't know if that's true. I'm not a environmental scientist, but I have concerns about the impact and also in terms of the Endangered Species Act.
Thank you. Other questions? Mr. Fox.
Now, is the bridge necessary for Mr. Ford to get to his property? That's the only way he can get there?
Well, when you say necessary, he's been before the bridge, I guess, when everybody else has just driven across or walked across. So can you get to it without getting your feet wet? I guess only with boots, and I'm not trying to be smart, but there is no other bridge access to his property.
Yeah. So you can't get there from the land side then?
I don't believe there's a recorded right-of-way. I believe there is other possible access routes, but I do believe that that parcel, the right-of-way, is across Hoe Creek. I don't know if I answered your question.
No.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Mr. Sessoms.
You have an adverse impact to you. As indicated, you state negative impact or denial of my right-of-way access to 44-acre mountain, two bridges 20 yards apart. Am I reading that to mean that with that bridge, you're not able to construct a bridge?
I don't know. I have concerns. I have concerns that if I came before you in 5 years, or whomever was seated in your chairs, you or other folks, that it would be, you know, a concern. And I've been told... in terms of people I've spoken with at agencies, I've received two different responses. One is we would just look at it in isolation, and my question was, how can you just look at it in isolation? How can you not turn to the right and see 20 yards away there's a concrete bridge there? So, yes, my concern is my ability to exercise my right to have access to my 44 acres of fountain, other than by foot, if I chose to exercise that and not to lose that right. And I can't stand here and say to you, I'm sure that would happen, but I think it's a potential harm. And I think it's one that, you know, could have been avoided had the existing right-of-way been used as the access point. That was the point of it, to minimize the damage to the environment, have one crossing. So I have concerns about that.
Mr. Palmer.
I have two questions, if I may. When did you buy that 44-acre piece of property?
I believe 1986 or 1987.
Okay. And the second question that I had for you was regarding what you thought about the federal laws. You think or you know?
I have read part of the National Environmental Policy Act. I am somewhat familiar with the Clean Water Act. But I am not an environmental attorney, and I'm not going to stand here and represent... unless you wish me to brief on a particular point, which I'm happy to do.
I want to know if you think or no.
I did take environmental law. I was in the first class of Women Mary that took it. And I have prosecuted one case under the Clean Water Act. But am I an expert? Absolutely not.
Thank you.
I know this much about it, which is dangerous.
Thank you, Ms. French.
Thank you.
Mr. Four is represented. Sir, do you wish to speak to any of these issues? Mm-hmm. You swear you in? You swear the testimony you will give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Please state your name for the record.
Jeremy Tweedy with Greenway Engineering in Winchester, Virginia. A couple things listening to Mrs. French. I'm not familiar with all the historical background of her relationship with Mr. Smith or how she purchased the property and what's in the deeds as far as access. What I can tell you is that we did, Mr. Smith was approached by Frederick County after a call was made about the bridge. It was deemed that the bridge was considered a structure and therefore was required to have a building permit. Mr. Smith had back in 2005 previously applied and felt he had the permit he needed in place to build this bridge. So from a local standpoint, he's gone through all the processes as for attaining this permit, with the exception of state approval, which is from the VMRC, which is what he's waiting on. The zoning ordinance, or the planning and zoning department, the public works department, and the Frederick County Inspections Department are all on standby, ready to approve his building permit for this structure once it's approved by the commission. One other fact I'd like to make is prior to the bridge, they were forging the creek, vehicular forging the creek, trucks, you know, that sort of thing, accessing the property for recreational purposes. So there was quite a bit of, I think, disturbance in that respect from an environmental standpoint that we need to consider. And this is definitely an improvement for that purpose. Mr. Four has obtained a building permit and a certification for a drain field on his property, and he does plan on building a residence there. So from a 911 emergency standpoint, this is going to be important for him to have safe means of ingress and egress from his property versus, you know, forging the creek to access that. Do you have any questions for me?
Any questions? Mr. Fox?
I'm just looking at drawing L that Ms. French provided.
I wasn't afforded a copy of that. I'm sorry.
Does the bridge connect to some road or right away?
They're both gravel access points on both sides. Mr. Four's property is landlocked, so this is the only means of ingress and egress to the property. The other crossing was a wider part of the creek, a little bit further down, that where they forged the creek, and this is, I think that's why they decided to build in this location, because it was just a shorter area for them to span and be able to build the bridge.
And you were the contractor on the job?
No, Mr. Smith is a licensed contractor, and he had built the bridge. We're just the engineering firm. We did the floodplain study. We're doing the drain field design for Mr. Four. We provided all the information to VMRC, DEQ. I met with Ron Stauffer out on site, and we're here today just to...
Now, Ms. French allows us how the bridge was built on Mr. Davis's property, and he was not the applicant.
Right. Well, the bridge was built before Greenway was involved, so I can't speak to any of that. I do know that an ingress and egress easement was worked out, and it's on record with the county that this is in the place where it's, we went out and surveyed that location. It's at, I think in Mike's packet there is a survey from Farsino. There's another surveying firm that had done that survey from Mr. Smith.
Plumber.
Is Mr. Four or Mr. Smith here? Either one of them?
Neither applicant is here.
Mr. Tank.
So Ms. French represented to us that this bridge was part of a condition for the sale of the property. Is that true?
It was written in the contract. Mr. Four did not want to forge the creek to access the property if he was going to purchase the property. So Mr. Smith did, that was part of the agreement to build a bridge. And he had what he believed he had in place was a permit to do so, and then found out that, you know, permits and things expire and change. And he's, in the county's eyes, has went through the process to obtain the proper approvals. He even hired another local structural engineer to evaluate the bridge. There's weight limit signs on both sides of the bridge to warn people of, if you exceed 6,000 pounds, or I think it's 10,000, not to cross here.
Yes, sir.
So you're
being from the area, would you say there's any public benefit? As Ms. French also represented, that there are no public but only private benefits here?
This is definitely private for Mr. Ford's purposes. The public benefit would just be, they don't have to forge the creek anymore, and therefore no more pollutants in the water than need be. Every time tires and things go through, debris and dirt and grit falls off, and that's in the creek. So this prevents that from happening. I will make another point that the 100-year flood is 8 feet above this bridge, so this has no impact with the flood zone whatsoever.
Can you comment on if there were a second bridge placed 20 yards away, what effect does that have on the
I think,
floods?
Once again, when you go through the floodplain study itself and you analyze the area, you'll find out that even another low water bridge won't adversely affect the base flood elevation from an increased water standpoint. I think as far as the purpose of the bridge would have to be, like they were saying, an isolated review and by merit of what it's for, whether it would be accepted or not.
Any other questions?
I just have a question of staff member.
Okay.
With regard to Mrs. French's concerns on the application or lack of application process, did you look into her claims that Mr. Smith had knowledge of the requirement to have a permit but move forward without getting one? And let me go to my specific question. And looking at the materials, it seems like that discussion about whether a permit was needed took place a long time ago, and I can't tell if it was for the exact same location that there had been a previous request. And I wanted to know about what you'd looked into.
Looking at the previous 2003 application, it looked like it was on Hog Creek. It was not a finger creek off of it or anything like that. So I'm just assuming, I wasn't the staff member who reviewed the application back in 2003, but they determined that it was not a jurisdictional area and said no permit was necessary. And this was a result of an application being filed by Mr. Smith. So he had knowledge that he needed to at least apply to see if he needed a permit from VMRC, and was told at that point no permit was necessary. So I'm assuming he moved forward based on that letter that we sent him back in 2005 that a permit was not required.
And he did not you didn't address with him her specific issues that she's raised with us today?
I told them of her concerns, which were the environmental concerns, the flooding concerns, and the concerns she had about being able to build her own right-of-way access.
Not about the application.
Not about the application process. Not about the application process. I was working on the assumption that he thought he had everything he needed at that point back in 2003. No permit necessary in 2003. I'm assuming he thought he still didn't need one in 2007 or 2011.
In 2003, was it contemplated that he was building it on somebody else's land?
At that point, if VMRC wasn't exerting jurisdiction, we wouldn't have reviewed
it. We don't
know. Any further questions? Yes, sir. Mr. Sessions.
Is there any standard in the code that addresses distance between bridges?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Sure.
I am curious if you would ask Greenway Engineering, and they are no way involved in this, not suggesting that they were involved in the construction or design, whether from their analysis of the four property is it all in floodplain. Because now that I hear
you're asking if the Ford property is in the floodplain.
Yeah, Donald Ford, applicant's property is all in floodplain, because I just heard for the first time that he is intending to build a house.
Right. Okay.
The limitation in the deed and zoning would affect it.
Do Do you wish to respond to that question?
He has to go through planning and zoning department for his permit. They review that type of thing. So I can't speak specifically into the deed, how it's interpreted, whether he's allowed a building right or not. But they've already approved his drain field location plat, which is on record. So I would only assume that at this time he has everything legally in place to have that one building right. And yes, the majority of the property is in floodplain. Through our study, we found out there is an area that is buildable and outside of the floodplain, which he's going to utilize.
Thank you. Matters before the commission. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the testimony we've heard by the protestant in this case and the concerns that have been expressed in terms of how this played out, how the permitting process and how the construction process itself was done, and the concern about this being done on somebody else's property other than the applicant's property. And yet, I think those issues that may have affected her rights and impacted the area were essentially civil issues. It seems to me that to the extent that the applicant that comes before us now has negotiated a right-of-way or an easement where the bridge is constructed, which might be an outstanding issue were it not resolved, has been, in fact, resolved. But I think those issues that were problematic from a historical standpoint essentially hinged on civil matters. And so, you know, it seems to me that the question then becomes, does the applicant properly have standing? And if so, what are the benefits and detriments associated with the project we have to consider under the code? And I think the applicant does have standing. I think there are private benefits, and while the benefits of the project may be largely private and not public, they do outweigh the public detriments that have been identified, at least by staff. Staff in their assessment has made reference to the Department of Game and Inland Fisheries comments, the DCR comments, which I don't think rise to a highly significant level. So it seems to me that staff has addressed all of these concerns. Again, I think the history of this project is problematic, but I think that's largely a civil matter. I think those issues, to the extent that they affect ownership, have been resolved as far as this commission is concerned. So I would concur with the staff recommendation.
Ms. Fox?
I just wonder if Ms. French was given access to use the bridge herself, whether her objection would go away, since we live very close there and just extend the road and connect them. We don't have a jurisdiction. I'm pointing my lawyers pointed out to me.
Okay. Is there a motion? Ms. Tankard?
I understand what my colleague has said here. At the same time, I don't think you can avoid looking at the history of this application. It seems to me that the maneuvering to get around the public's laws about jurisdiction over this Hogue Creek is an issue. The state is picking up the tab, I believe, for the development of a private piece of property here. Without this bridge, the property wouldn't have been sold. We've heard testimony to that effect. The bridge was built without a permit. We've heard testimony to that effect. There has been a lot of maneuvering to make private dollars on the public good. And I don't think we can turn a blind eye to that. And so I make a motion to deny this bridge outright.
There is a motion to deny the application. Is there a second to the motion?
Sorry.
Seconded by Mr. Fox. Comments on the motion? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the record here is important, and in that record there is essentially an error that I think is significant with respect to the history, and that is that when application was originally made by the applicant's predecessor, that is Mr. Smith, he was informed by the commission, I believe in 2003, when he made application that, in fact, the commission did not have jurisdiction over the site. And so, in fact, that was an error. The state did have jurisdiction. The commission did have jurisdiction. But as far as the applicant knew, that is the applicant's predecessor knew, the commission did not have jurisdictional authority there. So moving forward then without a subsequent JPA, I don't think is unreasonable. I mean, I think their understanding of their requirements were informed by that transmittal from this commission in 2003, and I think that's an important part of the history. Again, I think the way some of this was done, to the extent that it was located on somebody else's property, that is problematic, but it would have been a civil matter. As I understand it, it has been resolved in terms of the applicant now having the right of way. So I would offer a substitute motion to accept staff recommendation.
Substitute motion to accept staff recommendation. Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Palmer.
I have a question.
Comments?
Yes. Because I think what is concerning me is that even today we have an agent appearing who participated in this project after the fact, you know, way after the fact, came in to give us studies, is not here to discuss the history. We don't have Mr. Smith or Mr. Four before us to answer questions about the proceedings that happened before. And I would ask that the commission entertain tabling this matter until we can have before us either Mr. Smith or Mr. Four to answer questions about what was done and how, because we're guessing as to their knowledge. It is an after-the-fact request. We do need to know their knowledge and whether this was an innocent mistake or something more, you know, problematic. And I'd ask both movements to entertain tabling it until we can ask for one of those gentlemen to come and appear. I don't know if we have that ability in our procedures to do it, but I would like to hear from them rather than an agent who's hired to come up and say, well, I don't know anything that happened during this process. And we only have Mrs. French saying, I talked to him, and this is what I know. And I just think that leaves us, because we've been asked not to assess any civil penalty, and to do so based on a mistake that may have been made in 2003. And so, I mean, maybe that happened, and maybe that was their understanding, but I don't have them here to ask that question. I think that's important.
Let's take up the issue of tabling. Tony, can we do that?
I don't
no problem with that?
I mean, structure's there. I mean, if you want to continue this and table it to hear from other folks, I certainly think you can do that. I do understand that there was some escrow monies being held that expired at some point, but given the magnitude of the situation and the circumstances that you are concerned about, I don't think that's your issue necessarily. And if we want to invite the current owner and the previous owner here, we can certainly do that by letter or notice. I think it's up to the commissioner or the commission if they want to formally subpoena those folks. We typically don't use subpoenas. We can, as I understand, unless Paul corrects me on that one, but I think we could certainly write them a letter informing them that if you decide that it's been deferred and request that they be here to address the commission regarding the nature of the application.
Let's thank you, Tony. Let's talk about the motion to table. Does anyone wish to speak to that at this point? Ms. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I question what we would benefit from additional review with the principals here, given the fact that I think most of the issues that relate to the original construction still revolve around issues that would have been civil in nature, given the fact that, at least from a regulatory standpoint, the predecessor and the builder of the bridge, Mr. Smith, had a letter from this agency in 2005 that's described as Exhibit 6 in our book that indicates that the project is in an area over which the Marine Resources Commission is not exerting jurisdiction and no authorization will be required from this agency. So it seems to me that would have informed the builder of the bridge and the applicant now where they located it and whether or not they encroached on somebody else's rights in doing so. I think from Mrs. French's testimony, that's certainly problematic. But, again, I think it's a civil issue. I think it's been resolved. I mean, I just question how much more benefit we get out of dragging the principals in here to hear their historical side of the story.
At this point, no one is putting forward that they should pay any assessment for an after-the-fact application. In essence, we're waiving that as a board. And we're doing it after hearing testimony that I think is counter to the idea that they believed they didn't need a permit. It sounds like the information was more along the lines of we have a permit. And I don't know if that's just a mistake in the understanding of what was said back in 2005, you know, being told you don't need one as opposed to you hold one, and also where that was going to take place. And obviously it wasn't going to happen on somebody else's property at the time that they were told that. So that goes to my request to table it. I certainly understand your concern with doing that, but I don't think it brings any harm to them to come and appear before us as opposed to sending an agent who really can't answer these questions. And I don't really see any real problems with this bridge. I mean, I don't see where we've identified any real negative impacts from the bridge. It's more along the lines of the approval process that concerns me, that somebody is coming back to us and saying, approve it after I've built it. And we don't want to be in the practice of doing that, except when we're sure that this was a mistake of some sort, unless we assess them a civil penalty as a result of it being an after-the-fact request.
Well, I think that the mistake that was made is that staff originally incorrectly identified and told the applicant they didn't need a permit. I don't know of any citizen in the Commonwealth who wants being told you don't need a permit from a governmental agency who's going to call up 5 years later and say, are you sure I don't need that permit? I just, you know, I think they were acting in very good faith that they didn't need a permit.
I think that could be true. It could be true. If I'm saying I'm going to build the bridge here and you say you don't need a permit for that, that's fine. But if I build it on the other side of my parcel instead, I may need to make that request again, and I don't know that.
Any other comments? Mr. Palmer,
I did have a comment. It seems to me that Mr. Smith thought he was doing the right thing, in that he had the permits or was told 2003, you don't need a permit. In 2005, he got the local permits. Where the bridge was placed, whether it was on the Davis property or the Four property, is not our problem. As Mr. Robbins said, that's a civil problem, and it's already been resolved. But it's not our problem, and I think I'd like to see this matter get resolved today.
Any other comments?
I think one of the things we have to take into account with the testimony we have heard today is that Ms. French indeed said that Mr. Smith stated to her directly that he had permits necessary to build this bridge. So with that statement and testimony, it seems to me that Mr. Smith knew that he needed to have these permits to build, which is obviously a very substantial bridge that would preclude both canoeing, tubing, fishing in that area.
Let's see, where are we? Do we actually get a motion to table, or was that a?
I didn't make a motion. I asked the question of the movements to entertain that idea of tabling. It seems like they don't want to entertain it. I move it, but I think my vote is going to be reflecting my position. In that I don't believe we should approve a bridge under these circumstances without hearing from the person asking for the bridge.
Okay, unless I hear a motion to table, we're going to go back to the substitute motion to accept. So let me ask, is there a motion to table? Okay, hearing none, we're back on the substitute motion to accept the staff recommendation and approve the project.
Say that again.
We're back to the substitute motion to accept the application, the after-the-fact application, in accordance with staff recommendation. Are we ready to vote?
Right.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Let's see a show of hands on that one.
On the nose?
The nose. Okay, there are three noes. Okay, so motion.
Yes.
Is that Mr.
Mr. Tankard, Mr. Plumlee, and Mr. Fox voted no. All the others voted yes. Any abstentions? Okay. We now substitute. That motion becomes the main motion. We've got to vote again, folks. So all of those in favor of the motion to approve the project in accordance with staff recommendation, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion carries. 5-3.